Before we start the new perek, HaMocher, in terms of what we said yesterday on Daf Tzadi Aleph about the possibility that Elimelech, Machlon V'Kilion were punished because they were guilty of leaving Eretz Yisrael, we mentioned the Rashbam and the Ramban. Two different takes on leaving Eretz Yisrael, why that's a violation. According to the Shita of the Rashbam, the problem is that he's being mafkir himself from the mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz. Whereas according to the Ramban, on the other hand, he's being mafkir himself from the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and Bittul Eretz Yisrael. One would wonder if this machlokes would have an impact on the question of whether or not living in Eretz Yisrael is a goal, an end unto itself, or just a means to an end. And perhaps the Rashbam is saying that living in Eretz Yisrael is only a means to an end. And this is Rabbi Chaim Cohen, quoted in Tosfos at the end of Ksubis, that Bizman HaZeh, in his time, there was no possibility of being Mekayim the mitzvah Tulis Ba'aretz, and therefore he says there's no mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban, on the other hand, would say that the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is not dependent upon whether or not he could fulfill the mitzvah Tulis Ba'aretz. It's a separate mitzvah unto itself. To leave Eretz Yisrael, therefore, is a hafkah or a bittul of an essay, and that's biyadayim, that's an active bittul essay, that's prohibited. So we're excited now to start the sixth perek, HaMocher Peros, and that begins on Daf Tzadi Beis Amud Aleph. Just a few words of background. The name of the perek is HaMocher, and with regard to sales, one of the most fundamental issues that comes up in Dinim Omnis, in Choshen Mishpat, is Mekach Tos. I bought something on the false premises. And that's going to be the major subject here of this Mishnah. The Mishnah is going to touch on a question of someone who purchased an item and claims that the objective, the goal for which he purchased the item, cannot be achieved, and therefore he wants out. He wants his money back.
Okay, I don't blame him.
But yet, although it's absolutely crystal clear that Mekach Tos undermines the Kinyan, and the reason for that is that there's no das machne, no das kone. But nevertheless, what happens in situations where it's not clear? The mocher sold him an item. The lokeh, from his part, never stipulated why and his goal in buying this object. Is the burden of proof on the mocher? Because in this case, the lokeach is disappointed in the object in a very fundamental way, or is the burden proof on the lokeach because the buyer didn't stipulate, and he never said explicitly exactly why, he never told the mocher exactly why he's selling? Or can there be external evidence, what we call umdina, circumstantial evidence that indicates that the mocher should have or could have known exactly why the lokeach purchased the item? So these are some of the issues that are going to come up in the Mishnah. So let's now begin. The doc is here so we can start the new perek. Okay? HaMocher Peres L'Chavero. A person sells produce to his friend. And this produce is something like kitnios or tvua, the Rashbam explains, legumes or grains. And these can be used for two different purposes. There are certain legumes, not all of them, that can be used as seeds. And you can plant them and produce. Other legumes can only be used for eating purposes. No matter how well you plant them, you're not going to get anything growing from them. So that, therefore, since these peros fit into those categories of items which can be used in a general sense for one of two things, either for planting as seeds or for eating, if they're not royal Israel, they're not matzmiyah, they don't give fruit, they don't produce, they cannot be used as seeds, they're used for food. You can take these kidneys and cook them and eat them as is. Now, in this particular case, it's unclear why the lokeach, the purchaser, bought these seeds. Now, if he bought them for the purpose of Zriya, which down the line he'll make more of a profit on it, because for Achila it's worth X, but for Zriya it might be worth X plus Y, then he has a right to claim Mekach Tos in an event that he tried planting them and no go. On the other hand, the Mocher can counter, well, since some people would buy these kitnios, this tefuah for the purpose of eating them, I sold it to you for the purpose of eating. And if you, Mr. Buyer, had a das kona, which was contingent on the fact that it could be used as seeds for planting purposes, why didn't you tell me? So there are arguments here in both directions. There's the mocher, the machne, there's the kona, the lokeach, and each one has his argument. So what happens? Ra'im v'lot samchu. The buyer did what he wanted to do to achieve his goal, namely to use them for seeds and planting. But lo and behold, there was no success. The Mishnah is going to tell us that in this case, the mocher is exempt from any responsibility, because the buyer didn't stipulate that he wants to buy for purposes of Zriya. And therefore the mocher has rights to counter and say, well, I sold it to you for Achila. And not only that, the Mishnah says, Afilu Zera Pishtan. Now we're talking about flax seeds, which is usually purchased for planting purposes. You see, in the case of kitnios and tefuah, 50-50 can go either way. It's a toss-up. But in the case of flax seeds, which is called Zera Pishtan, there, most people on the street tap on the back. Why would you back buy flax seeds? Who wants to eat flax seeds? I mean, today it's very popular. You know, it's supposed to be very healthy. Yeah. But back in the day, what did you buy flax seeds for? Okay, there were some people who were, I guess, health nuts even back in the day. But most people would buy flax seeds for purpose of planting. And that's where you get the maximum benefit from it. Says the Mishnah, nevertheless, Eino chayev b'achor yusam. The mocher is completely exempt from any responsibility. The deal is not canceled. The mocher, the seller, does not have to give back the money that he received in payment for these flax seeds. And shalom al Yisrael, and let the lokeach bang his head against the wall. He's stuck with this purchase of flax seeds, which he can only use to place on his whole wheat bread, you know. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, again, there are different gersos here. Some say that Rav Shimon Gamliel was quoted even in the Reish of the Mishnah. He says, Zarone Gina, there's one case which is an exception to the rule. She'enam ne'echolim. The purpose of these quote-unquote garden seeds, which the Rashbam explains are either kruv, they're seeds of cabbages, or kaflut, which is seeds of leek. These, she'enom necholim, if, let's say, for example, he planted them and nothing grew, and they're not edible. In other words, clearly in this case of cabbage or leek seeds, they were sold for the purpose of zriya, of seeding, to grow something. Nobody eats leek seeds. I don't know. That's what it says here. So therefore, chayev b'achor yusam. In this case, the mocher is going to have to reimburse the buyer for the money that he received in payment. Why? Because mimanafshach. If these seeds, which by their very nature are not edible, they're only designated for the purpose of Zriya, and now the lokeach planted them, and lo and behold, nothing grew, then for what purpose did he buy it? And in this case, the mocher is responsible to reimburse the lokeach. Now, the Rishonim here asked the following question: what exactly is the chiddush of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel? This would be a classical case of mekach tos, because the lokeach is stuck with something which is bought for purpose of Zriya, He planted it, and nothing grew. It didn't take. And the Beis Yosef gives the answer that perhaps we would have thought that the mocher has a right to claim against the lokeach, return the zrayim that I sold you. I don't want to reimburse you unless I get back the object that I sold you. You went ahead and planted them. That's your headache. If you can't give me back the object, then there's no mekatos. The whole predicate of mekatos is take back your automobile that has no engine in it, and I'm going to get back my money and reimburse me. But if the automobile fell off a high cliff and it got smashed to smithereens, then the mocher says, I'm not going to reimburse you for something unless you give me back the object that I sold you. Kamash Malon, the Chiddush of Rav Shimon Gamliel, is that it's as if the mocher told the lokech explicitly, go ahead and plant with these seeds, because these leek seeds have no other purpose whatsoever than planting. Therefore, obviously, the sale was done under the understanding that what would the lokech do with these seeds? He would plant them. Other mafarshim want to say that the Chiddush of Rav Shimon Gamliel is that I would have entertained the possibility that the mocher has a right to say to the lokech, you're a very bad farmer. These leek seeds or cabbage seeds are perfectly good seeds. If you messed up, maybe you didn't dig into the ground, maybe you didn't water it properly, whatever it is your, it's your headache. No. Unless we have evidence to prove that the lokech was in some way negligent, then Rav Shimon Gamliel insists that since we assume, unless proven otherwise, the lokech did everything a normal person would have done, and he's a good farmer, he's a professional farmer, he planted these leek seeds, these cabbage seeds, they didn't take, there was the fault, therefore, is in the object, not in the person. Namely, that this seed was not a good seed, so he sold me seeds that are poor, and that's called mekartos. All right.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, please, David.
Would there have to be das in the mind of the seller that he knows it's defective? Let's say if somebody you sell a car with no engine, the seller knows that, but with the seeds, how would he know they're defective before they're trying to be planted?
Correct. So since the buyer had no idea that these were defective, like for example, you sell me a car and it's in perfectly good shape. Now, there are cases where in Minigam Medina is that you check it out before you buy it, and then if Lokeh failed to do so, the responsibility is his. But in the case of the seeds, they look exactly like other seeds, but yet they turned out to be rotten seeds. Itmar. Okay, now we get to the exciting Gemara here. This is what you call a classical Gemara in Nezikin. Hamocher shor lechavero v'nibsa naghan. What happened? When a person buys an ox, there are two categories of oxen. One is l'radya, and one is l'charisha, meaning you can take this ox, and you can slaughter it, and it's worth X amount on the market for its meat. On the other hand, if you want to get more for your buck, what you do is, if the ox is healthy, and it could work, you use it as a work animal, and it does charisha, and it plows your field. Ultimately, it gets old, so you shecht it. But in the meantime, you can get a good year or 10 years worth of work out of this ox. And what happened? It turns out that the ox that was sold to the buyer cannot be used for anything but shechita. And the reason for that is because the shor is a naghan. Now, the Mefarshim explain that the shor was a naghan. It was a goring shor at the time of the Mechira. If at the time of the sale it was a perfectly good shor, it was not aggressive in any way, and for some reason the shor changed its personality and became aggressive subsequent to the Mechira, that's Lokeach's problem. The Mocher doesn't have to guarantee that this will be a nice, tame, shy shor for the rest of its life. But in this case, the shor turned out to be a naghan from the moment, or before the moment, of mechira. The lokeach was unaware of that fact. Now, what do you do with a shor naghan? It doesn't make sense to hold on to such a shor and keep it alive, because for two reasons. One is a financial consideration, the other is a moral consideration. On a financial level, it's not worth it, because if this shor goes out and damages, you as the Baal HaShor are going to be held responsible for that. Either Nezek Sholem in the case of a shor Muad, or Chatzi Nezek in the case of a shor Tam. But on a moral level, the Mishnah says in the Masechta Bava Kama that Ein Lo Shmira Ela B'Sakin. The Torah says, Lo Tosin Dom V'Sech, you don't hold on to a dangerous animal, you have to shecht it. And I wish they would publicize that on the streets here of Katamon. The other day, I don't want to go through a terrible story, the dog, which was a little bit higher than me, I'm not a tall guy, but I still have 5'6", 5'7", and if not for the last inch, when she pressed an electric red light, I would have been saying this Bekiah Shir up in Shamayim. If the Masifta Derki would invite me to say the Daf Yomi, I don't know if they learned Daf Yomi in the Masifta Derki. I don't have any rights one way or the other. So Ein Lo Shmira Ela B'Sakin. So what do you do with a sakin? What kind of sakin do you use on a big fat ox, the meat of which is worth hundreds? You shecht it. You don't just take a knife and kill the animal. You shecht it. It's a kosher animal, as we learned in Parshas Shmini. Rav Amar Hareza Mekach Tos. Look, man, you sold me an ox. I got to slaughter it and sell it for its meat. I wanted a shor that's good for Harisha, that could serve me and work in my field, and therefore, this is a Mekach Tos. This was a sale under false premises. I want my money. I want my money back. The Rush asks the following question. We have a principle called Smoch Mi'uto L'chazaka V'Isra Le'ruba. Rav is assuming that when a person purchases a shor, he wants to use it as a work animal, because that's what people usually do. It's worth a heck of a lot more as a work animal to do plowing than it is for its meat. And ultimately, down the line, you'll shecht it when it gets a little bit schwach. But even though Rav is pushing the agenda on Rov, which means that most people, the majority of people on the market, would buy it for purposes of Harisha, nevertheless, there's a miut. There are people out there, the silent minority, that would buy a shor for purposes of Shechita. Not only that, the Mocher, to protect his argument, has what's called a Chazaka. He's holding on to the money, and the Mekach is assumed to be a valid sale unless proven otherwise. Now the burden of proof is on the lokeach to prove that he bought it for the express purpose of lecharisha, for work. And since the mocher, the seller, has on his side of the equation, number one, miut, number two, chazaka, we have a principle that if you add chazaka to a miut, the rove becomes very weak and loses out at kowtows to the chazaka. So why does Rav insist here that we could rely on Rav? And the Rush gives the following answer. He says that we have something called a chazaka hamishtanes, which means a chazaka that changes. Normally, we assume that every chazaka remains the same until we know otherwise. But certain chazakas, by their very nature, change. The mocher is saying that this mekach is valid because I'm holding on to the money. Yeah, but 5 minutes ago, you didn't hold on to the money, you held on to the shor. So who's exactly the muchzak over here? Therefore, the chazak itself of the mocher is somewhat weak. And in such a case, everybody should agree, says Rav, that we apply the principle of rov. Where do we know rov from? The pasuk says, Achri rabim lahatos. So if I find a piece of meat on the street, and there are 9 kosher butcher shops in town, and 1 trefa butcher shop, I can assume that the meat that I found in the street comes from the rov. That's what we call a statistical probability. And we learned this in the Masechta Ksuvos together. And therefore, azlinan basa ruba. It's interesting that the Tosfos Rid here introduces a whole other concept of rov. And he thinks that Rav is predicated on a different concept, which is called bitul barov. That means when you have a mixture of 1 non-kosher piece of meat with 2 kosher pieces of meat, and you don't know how to identify which is the kosher, which is the non-kosher, since the rov is kosher, then azlin and basar ruba here takes on a whole different concept, and it's called bitul barov. In any event, Shmuel Omar, The seller has the ability to claim, and until we know otherwise, he's in the driver's seat. I sold it to you for purposes of its meat on the market. Says the Rashbam, why does Shmuel insist that despite the majority who would buy it for Harisha purposes, the Moch has a right to say that you, my friend, never told me that you wanted to buy it for purposes of Harisha, and therefore I sold it to you for Shechita? And the answer is, says the Rashbam, Ein holchim b'mamon achar arov, which means that Shmuel insists that although in Issa v'heter, when I don't know if this meat came from a kosher butcher store or a non-kosher, I assume that it came from the rove, from the majority, that's only in Issa v'heter. But as far as Didi Momenus is concerned, monetary law, the Torah gives all the power of evidence on the side of the Muchzak, and therefore possession is 9/10 of the law. He wants to take the argument that the possession here is totally undermined, and therefore the mocher has to return this money, the burden of proof is on him, and therefore he is responsible. However, the Pilpula Charifta on the Rush, one of the super commentators on the Rush, he reads the Rush in a slightly different way than we said, than we present in the Rashbam. He wants to say that even Shmuel might theoretically embrace the rov here, except for the fact that the mocher has a right to say to the lokeach in this particular case, why didn't you tell me? I don't know what's in your heart. I don't know what's in your mind. The responsibility is on you as a seller to stipulate why and for what purpose you entered into this transaction. And the classical case is someone who sells his possessions because he intends to make aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, and then lo and behold, his plans did not materialize, and he comes back to the buyer and he says, this is a mekatos, had I known that I was not making aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, I never would have had this garage sale and sold, you know, the last piece of possession off my back, you know. So the Gemara says, no, he has no right to do so. Why? Because he didn't stipulate. At the time that the lokeach purchased all the possessions of the mocher, or whatever possessions, he was under the impression this is an outright unconditional sale. So comes along the Pilpula Charifta, and he wants to introduce another element into this equation. And that is that the mocher has a right to point an accusing finger at the lokeach and say, you're responsible because you didn't tell me explicitly that you bought it for purposes of Harisha. The Rashbam here introduces the Shita of Sumchus. Sumchus holds, instead of Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya, that Momen Amuto B'Safe Cholkim. When we have some sort of a doubt, then we split it equally. The Gemara at the beginning of Bab Metzia wants to claim that Shnayim Ochsin B'Talos Yachloku is Aliba de Sumchus. The Gemara tries to work it out even according to the Chachamim. That's the famous Sugya in Bab Metzia Daf Beis Amid Beis. The Rashbam claims that Sumchus would agree in this case, according to Shmuel's logic, that Hamotzi Mechaveril Varaya. That's fascinating. We always assume that Sumchus would reject the principle of Hamotzi Mechaveril Varaya in favor of Yachloku. Comes along the Rashbam, right here, you saw it first, Rabosai, here on Daf Tzadi Beis Amid Aleph in Bava Basra, and you'll find it nowhere else. The Rashbam says that even Sumchus agrees to Hamotzi Mechaveril Varaya. The only thing is, Sumchus says Yachloku when we don't know exactly what happened. If we don't know what happened, and there's a suffix about the Maisa, the Gufashal Maisa, what exactly occurred, what transpired, that's when Sumchus assumes that since the suffix is in the Maisa itself, therefore we apply the rule of Yachloku. But if the suffix is not in the Maisa, but rather the suffix is in the claims and the counterclaims, you know, who's responsible and what did he buy, and so forth and so on, in that case, even Sumchus would agree that Hamotzi Mechavel of Haraya, and when we say Haraya, the Hay of Haraya is what we call the Hay Hayidia, and the Hay Hayidia, the special Raya, which works and operates as effectively in Dini Mamas, is what we call Edim. The Torah says, Al Pishnayim Edim Yakum Dover. If somehow the lokeach, and it's going to be very challenging for him to come up with testimony to support his claim against the mocher, that this was a mekach tos, then even Shmuel would agree that we say haraya. But in the absence of such evidence, where the mocher says, I sold it to you for shechita, and lokeach says, I bought it for harisha, at the end of the day, the mocher is holding on to the money, hamotzi mechavero, all of haraya, v'ein holchim b'mamon, acharo. Now the Gemara introduces what we call umdina. Umdina means circumstantial evidence. Perhaps we don't have two witnesses to support the claim of the buyer, but nevertheless, we have real strong objective evidence. For example, if you're a farmer, why do you buy an ox?
To plow
with it. If you're a butcher, why do you buy an ox?
To shecht
it. Says the Gemara, let's say we have very strong circumstantial evidence. Let's check it out. Igavra dezovin linichseta. If he's a person who buys something as a butcher to slaughter it, then linichseta. Then the mocher is right. I sold it to you for shechita. Ila raja. But if he's a person who has a farm and he works the land, what does he need? He needs a shor for working the land, for plowing the land. And the Rashbam adds here, then in such a case, the mocher should have understood that if he's selling this cow to a farmer, then he's selling it for purposes of harisha. And it's as if, says the Rashbam, the buyer had explicitly told him at the time of the sale that he's buying it for purposes of use. And therefore, for sure, this would be a mekatos. In other words, the Gemara is saying, forget about the principle of holchim amon acharov, ein holchim amon, that whole issue between Rav and Shmuel could stand on, we'll shelve it for the time being. There's a very clear-cut and easy way of figuring out where the mocher should have known that he's selling a shor to this person for harisha. And the reason is because the person is a farmer. So sure enough, the Gemara is going to come up with the following Hechitim. So the Kimta is the Gavra de Zavin Lachi Lachi. He's a farmer and he's a butcher. I guess in his spare time, if it's not going well in the farm, he shechts animals and sells its meat. Or alternatively, if he's an entrepreneur. In other words, there's no way of introducing an umdina here and determining what purpose he had in mind when he purchased this.
Rabbi,
this
what if the price is 20% lower than...
That's the next question of the Gemara. Beautiful. Now the Gemara says, okay, we don't have an umdina from the occupation of the buyer, but we do have an umdina from the amount of money he paid. And this is called in the Lashon HaShas, Damim Mochichim. That's a sugya back on Daf. Ayin Zayin Amid Beis. What does it mean, Damim Mochichim? The price itself will prove what the understanding in this transaction, this agreement was. You pay X for a shar l'shchita, if it's only worth its meat. You pay X plus Y equals Z, a heck of a lot more if the shar is a workhorse, a work ox. So let's just see what the lokeach was paying here. If the mocher overcharged him which would be the going price for a shor l'charisha, and lo and behold, this shor is a nagchon, and all you can do is shecht it, then obviously there's a mekach tos over here. And that's your question. Now, you should know that the sugya of domim mochichim, back on Daf Ayin Zayin, records a machlok shrin Rabbi Yehuda in the Tanakhama. Not everyone embraces the sheet of Domim Mochikin. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that if you sell something called a tzemed, tzadi mem dalit, which is a kind of a yoke that you put on an ox, the word tzemed, at least in the minds of many people, includes the ox as well. Again, it all depends upon the vernacular way people speak. So that if a person buys a quote-unquote tzemed, then, says Rabbi Yehuda, Domi Mochichim. For a tzemed, for a yoke, you pay 100. For a yoke plucks an ox, you pay 200 or 500. Let's see what he paid. Chachamim say, Ein Domi Mochichim. So all the Rishonim, there's a list here, Lang V'Yiddish Agolos, they all ask the question, since the Chachamim are of the opinion that ain't Dami Mochim, why does the Gemara introduce here, V'lechse Dami Hechi Ninhu, let's check out and see how much money he paid for this deal on the Shar. So that if we have time for what's called a more in-depth shir, then we'll come back and we'll answer this question. I'll just give you quickly the Tosis, Divya Maski of Alekze, and you'll take a look and see how long that Tosis is, give you the gist of what he says. He claims that most people use the word semed to refer to a tzemed. And when they want to sell a cow or an ox, they use the word bakar. And the sale was on a tzemed. The Chachamim say that since there's very strong evidence that the buyer only was interested in a tzemed, he can't claim, why didn't you deliver me a bakar as well, the cow as well? However, in that case, ain dom of mochichim. Again, you're going to have to understand why the lokech was willing and he agreed to buy such, you know, such a tzemed, you know, a yoke on the ass back for such a high price. And maybe he... Again, there are very strange answers to explain the Chachamim Shita. Maybe he just gave him a gift and he was willing to pay extra money, whatever, he was desperate, whatever the case might be. Nevertheless, says Tosfos, here in the case of a shar, whatever description or whatever adjective you add to the shar, you know, this is a shar, l'shchita, or a shar l'radya, either way, it's a shar. A shar is a shar is a shar. So that the language is not going to be indicative of what the nature of the shar is. And here, the Gemara thinks that in that case, since we have no proof one way or the other, then damiv mochichim, we can prove it based on the amount of money that the buyer was willing to pay for the shar. Because there are two different prices, shar A and shar B, the two categories of shvarim. Where do the Chachamim say ein damiv mochichim? That's when the language itself indicates one object. And now the lokeh comes forward and says, well, I meant to buy that object plus another object. Most people don't mean shar ubakar when they use the word semet. I mean semet ubakar when they use the word semet. In any event, as I said, this is a gigantic issue in the Rishonim. It's a who's list over here. The Gemara says, lo tzricha di aiker bisro v'kam bidmei radya. Again, we're talking about a very specific set of circumstances, in which case the price of meat on the market all of a sudden appreciated, it shot up sky high. I always wanted to go to South Africa because I heard the price of meat there is very reasonable, maybe because of the rand. So I can go into Evron's, you know, in Cape Town and buy myself a good steak dinner for a third of what I pay in New York in La Marais or whatever restaurant you like. So the Gemara says, now wait a minute, are you telling me that the price of meat has shot up, and therefore the shar, even if it's only royal shechita, is worth on the market the same price as a shar facharisha? What's the machlokas here between the mocher and lokeach? Mainaf gemina. Ihochi le mainaf gemina. What difference does it make whether or not the mocher is right or lokeach right? There doesn't seem to be any price differential. The Gemara says, lo tzricha di aiker. Yeah, I'm sorry. Ihachi says the Gemara, lamai nafkemina. And the Gemara answers, nafkemina litircha. Imagine the hassle here. If you are like Shmuel, and we validate the claim of the seller, the lokech is stuck with this shar, and what he has to do is, he's got to go ahead and shech the shar, or, right, shech the shar, and sell it for its meat. That's called tircha. So we're imposing a tremendous hassle on the lokech, according to Shmuel, that he has to dispose of this ox and get his money back and sort of cut his losses. He really wants to use it for harisha. So Shmuel upholds the sale and validates it because he claims ein holchim b'momen achar rov. And Shmuel therefore says that the lokech is stuck holding the bag. He's going to have to hold the ox and sell it. Rav, on the other hand, rules in favor of the buyer, and he has a right to say, take back the shar, give me back my funds, and now you hassle in the market and get rid of the shar. Hechi Dami. The Gemara says, what's exactly the case? And here we turn to Daf Sadi Beis, Amid Beis. Let's understand the shita of Rav. Rav says that the lokeach has the right to back out of the deal. Correct? Well, if that be the case, then he wants his money back from the seller. If let's say the seller took the money that he received from the buyer and he gambled it, you know, he squandered it away, and therefore the lokeach has no recourse to get back his money, is li'akev Torah bezuze. There's a law that allows me to hold on to your possessions. Let's say you borrow money from me and you default on the loan. I, the malveh, who lent you the money, have rights to confiscate your property in lieu of the fact that you can't pay me. And in this case, the lokech is holding on to the shor, he's got the goods, and therefore li'akev, let him hold back the Torah, the shor, bezuze, in lieu of the money that's coming to him. And the Gemara says that this is in fact a phrase that people use. Now again, for those who eat bran, you're not going to appreciate this phrase. I eat a lot of bran. I don't know. Again, things have changed, and they'll probably change again. But right now in the health food market, you pay double for bran. It doesn't make any sense to me, but I saw you gave us. The Gemara says, the Amri Inshi, people say on the street, min mare rashvaseh, from someone rashvaseh who owes you money, Pare Ephra. Pare means bran. You can take bran and you know, if that's the only way he can repay you the loan, you know, you can imagine filling up this room with bran, which is worth, you know, 100 shekel, but you got a lot of bran. Bran is considered very cheap in the Gemara's language. Then that's what you do. So in any event, even though this shor is not the greatest shor, and the lokech is certainly not happy with this ox, but nevertheless, you know, better than nothing. Let him hold on to the ox. The Rashbam quotes another girsa here in this Gemara, and the girsa says not the ileka lishtalume mine, but rather idolesnehu lahani zuze. If he, the mocher, no longer is holding on to these zuzim, these coins. And the Rashbam accuses that girsa of making a major error, because if that girsa was correct, it means that the lokeach has no recourse to get money back from the mocher, except for those zuzim, which he actually handed over to him. Imagine he puts the money into a pouch. You know, he's got these silver coins in a pouch, and he the buyer, gives it to the seller. And as long as the seller is holding on to that pouch and those mos, then the lokeach has recourse to get his money. Otherwise, he's stuck with the shor. Says the Rashbam, that's absolutely incorrect. The law is that a malveh has a right to collect from the loan from any money that he owes him. If you owe me a debt, I'm not limited to the money that you got from me. And the Rashba here tries to work overtime to protect and defend this other girsa. But that again is more for an iyunshi. Lo tzricha de'ike l'shtalume minei. The case of Rav is the case where the mocher has mos, and therefore the lokeach has a right to hold out for his mos and say, look, here's your shor, bevakasha, take it back, thanks but no thanks, and give me back my money or any money to that equivalent value. Rav Amar Hareza Mekatos, why does Rav insist that the lokeach backs out of this deal? Basar Rubaz Linan, we go Basar Rov. And Rov people will buy a shor for the purpose of working the shor. Even though, again, this guy is both a farmer and a butcher, but most people, when they buy a shor, that's what they buy it. Ruba, L'Radyos Vini, most people buy it for Harisha. And therefore we can assume, if we don't know otherwise, that he bought it for purpose of working it as a plow animal. And now it's as if they had stipulated at the time of the sale that this is being sold for purposes of radya. Shmuel Amar Lecha, he'll tell Rav, Ki azlina basar ruba, where does the Torah recognize the power of rov? That's only beisura, in the case of the piece of meat that I found in the street, and I don't know whether I'm allowed to eat it or not allowed to eat it. But b'mamona, in dine mamonis, lo, we don't assume that the rov is strong enough to overpower the chazaka. And therefore, motzi mechavero, all of Araya. Now, let's see, we have about 6 minutes? Okay, good. So during the time that we have allotted to us, I want to present to you a view which is quoted here in the Shita Mekubetzes as to why Shmuel and Rav are at each other's throats here with regard to Rov, whether Rov is powerful enough to be Motzi Mamon Michezkoso. And he says the following: Im Toein HaMocher, if the seller claims Shapiresh Lelokeach, that at the time of the sale he explicitly told him that this shor is only worthy of slaughtering, that becomes a tainas bari, meaning within the claims and counterclaims of the buyer and the seller is a little bit in a weak position, says Rav, because since they didn't stipulate, and the rov, the majority of people, buy it for purposes of harisha, then the evidence kicks in favor of the buyer. And the seller really doesn't have a way of countering against the claim of the buyer. He's sort of like a taina shema. He says, I don't know. Did you buy for this? Did you buy for that? Go prove it. So Rav says that the buyer has an adequate proof. But if the mocher knows absolutely that the sale was for the purpose of shechita, i.e. the mocher claims, I told you from the get-go that this was being sold for the purpose of shechita, then with the claim of that tainus bari, even Rav would agree, hamotzi machavero olav haraya. So now we introduce a whole other variable into the equation, and that is the reason why Rav and Shmuel are fighting, battling at each other's necks here, as to who has the burden of proof, is because the mocher, says the Shita Mekubetzes, is in a very iffy situation. And that's why that's why Rav wants to tip the scale in favor of the rov against the mocher, because the mocher has no really valid claim that it was sold for shechita purposes, and therefore we can tip the scale in favor of the lokeach's argument. However, if the mocher has a valid claim, I sold you explicitly for this purpose, then even Rav would agree that hamotzi mechavero olav haraya. Meisve, the Gemara says that we have a Mishnah in Masechet Ksubos that Lechora is going to prove the sheet of Shmuel, that ain't olchim b'mon acharov. The din is that if a woman gets married for the first time, haksubas masayim zuz. If she's been married previously, she's not a besula, then she only gets meazuz. So Aisha shenis amul on his garsha, she was divorced or widowed, he omeres besula nisasi, I was married for the first time, and therefore my ksubas masayim, hu omer, and he's claiming, again, in the case of a widow, it's not she who's claiming, but the Yarshim, you know, those who have the estate, they're claiming, Loki Ela Almana Nisatif. You were married as an Almana. Your rights to the Ksub is only Me'azuz. In Yesh Edim Sheyotza Bi Numa, she would have the burden of proof that there was a certain kind of a ceremony of Yotzas Bi Numa for a virgin for a first marriage, meaning she wore a veil, Verosha Parua, and then after they removed the veil, her hair was exposed. And that's exactly what the minig was when they married off a besula. Ayin, Mishnah, Rishona, Perikcheni, the Ksubis, is Ksubasa Masayim. Then, since she has evidence, she collects Masayim. Says the Gemara, time on DK Edom, it's only that she's believed because of the evidence. Holeka Edom, if she didn't have any evidence to support her claim, lo, she would not be believed. Amai, Lema, why don't we operate here with Rov? She should be able to collect Masayim Zuz based on the Rov. And what is the Rov? Rov Noshim, Besulos, Nisos. Most marriages are first marriages. And that statistical probability is true even today. So according to Rav, we have a real serious problem in understanding why the Mishnah insists that unless she can prove with Edom, then the Baal will be in the driver's seat. Omar Ravina says, Mishum de'ika lemeimar rov noshim besulos nisos, even though most women are married for the first time, but mute, almanos, and the minority of women are married for a second time, v'chol anises besula yesh lakol, but everybody knows about the fact that it's a first marriage. This was public knowledge, the Yotzes Binuma ceremony with the veil and the whole bit was public knowledge. Vizu, Hoil V'ein L'kol, nobody is supporting our claim. You know, there should be 1,000 people standing on the queue to say, we know that this was the first marriage for her. No one comes forward. Israel La Ruba, her Rov is a very faulty and unreliable Rov. And therefore, even Rav, who says that Rov normally would be reliable, however, in this case, Rav would agree that there's no reliability to the Rov. What's the reisa that undermines the power of this Rov? Even though most women get married for the first time, why is it that no one knows about the fact that it was a first time marriage? So the Gemara says an unbelievable point, and we're almost finished, so we'll E kol anisos besulos yeshlem kol. If what you say is true, then any first marriage has this rumor, and it's public knowledge that it's a first marriage. Is ki ka edim? Why does the Mishnah say that if she produces edim that she was yotzis benuma, my havi? Why should we rely on the edim? I mean, the less la kol, if there is no kol, then for sure, if you don't mind closing the door, then for sure, in the absence of the kol, we can't even believe and trust these witnesses. Sahadi shakri ninhu. These are perjurers. You cannot rely on their testimony. And based on this question, the Gemara has to backtrack and say, no, it's not that every single marriage has a kol. Ela rov hanisus besulos yeshlam kol. In most cases, there's a rumor, and you know it's flashed on the front cover. But zu hol v'ein la kol. In this case, we don't know if the absence of a kol is proof positive that this is a second marriage for her. But nevertheless, since most people have a kol in this case, Isra la ruba, therefore her rov, that most women are first-time marriages, is weakened, and therefore, since there's no kol, we assume that in the absence of kol, her rov is not reliable, and she was married for a second time, she only gets mana. Comes along the Gemara and says that in such a case, we can rely on the Edim, that despite the absence of a kol, this is one of those minority cases where she was married for the first time, but we can't find anyone. Maybe it was a small wedding, maybe people weren't paying attention, maybe it was so many years ago, Zeal and Gishtarbin, they all went to the Olam HaEmes, and there's no one around to testify that we saw Hayotzis Binu, we found two Alta Yidden, you know, from before the Holocaust, you know, Holocaust survivors, today's Yom HaShoah, and they remember back in Poland in 1930 that she was Yotzis B'Numa. But the fact that no one else is around to testify, that's not going to undermine the truth and the reliability of these eight. I just want to tell you, as we stop here, that this is the only sugya in Shas. If you want to know, you know, what your unique opportunity was to learn this daf, where the Gemara actually raises the possibility that Hani Sade Shakri Ninhu, that even though there are no Eidim testifying against these witnesses, we just have their testimony, and only their testimony, we think they're a bunch of liars. And that's antithetical to the very essence and the very fabric of what Eidim is all about, and for this we have a whole literature. Okay, then, Rabosai. Just start the next Tashma, and we'll finish it up tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem, and review what we did. Hamocher Eved L'Chavero, a person sells an Eved. Now, there's certain cases where you could assume the Eved might not be the most moral, upstanding citizen. But in other cases, you know, to say that he's wanted dead or alive, I didn't buy an Eved who's going to be killed by the government. And the case that is addressed here in this brisa is a person sells an Eved and Nimtza Ganav. He turns out to be a thief. Okay. That's not a radical chiddush. The loker should have realized that he's running that risk. O kibiyustus. Okay, we're not sure exactly what kibiyustus means, whether he's a kidnapper, whether he's a gambler. He gia. So the brisa says that the buyer is stuck with it. He cannot invalidate this sale. But listim mizuyim, if he finds out that lo and behold he's an ob robber, o muchtav lamalchus, he's wanted by the government, he has a death sentence on his head, Omer lo, then in that case, the lokeach, the buyer, has a right to say, Hareshal Cholfanecha, here's your Eved, and give me back my money. This sale is a classical case of a mekatos. And then the Gemara is going to develop the idea of this proof. Resha, in the first case, My time, why is the sale valid? Lav mishum deruba hachi isnahu. Isn't it true that many, many slaves are either thieves or kidnappers? And here we see that the principle of rov is meaningful in dine mamonos. And Amir Tzashem, now that we're up to Daf Tzadi Gimel Amid Aleph, will analyze this sugya, Bli Neder, tomorrow.